Okay, Rabbi Sai. Being Mamshech that we started last week, we had a little bit of an introduction concerning that Rav Dessler was a product, of course, of Kelm. So we looked a little bit into the Shoyrish of Musar, the Mahalach of Musar regarding Kelm. Which was pointed out that the hallmark of Kelm, among other things, was the total self-control and the strict discipline of being a person being in complete command of one's actions and reactions. And of course this is attributed to Reb Simcha Zissel, who was known as the Alter from Kelm. You might remember that Rav Dessler himself married the granddaughter of Reb Simcha Zissel, and Reb Simcha Zissel, as you know, was the primary Talmud of Reb Yisrael Salanter, and Reb Dessler was also a grandson of Reb Yisrael Salanter. So there's a very, very inextricable connection, Reb Dessler, of course, with Reb Yisrael Salanter, as we say, spiritually and biologically and so on and so forth. One of the very interesting, famous episodes regarding, again, the Seder and the influence that the Alter from Kelm had on his Talmidim, it is related that a Polish general once came to Kelm and he asked the mayor if there was anything in town that might interest him. And the mayor told him that there was a school in town, he says, where the boys have such self-control that were anyone to walk in, he said, and make a disturbance, he said, the students, he said, would not notice and not respond. So the maestro goes is that this general, this Polish general, could not believe it. So he hired a drummer, and together, he says, he, the mayor, and the drummer walked into the back of the yeshiva. The drummer stood at the wall, and he waited for a signal. So the mayor gave the signal, and the drummer, Lamaisa, began drumming. He crashed his sticks on the drum. He says, no one in the Beis Medrash moved. No one in the Beis Medrash moved. Again, this was just one of many, many episodes, some of which we discussed last week, regarding the koyach of self-control in Kelm. It's kedai to mention one of the great goyim, you know, Reb Lezer Gordon. Lezer Gordon Lamaisa became the Rav and Rosh Yeshiva of Telz. I'm talking about now in the year 1874. Lezer Gordon was a goyin otzum, tremendous goyin. As a matter of fact, Reb Chaim Brisker considered the Reb Lezer Gordon to be the greatest, or the Godel Hador, he says, in Ahava Satoirit. In Ahava Satoirit. It's a great going. But specifically to point out this Nekuda, he was a Godel Hador, he said, in Ahava Satoirit. It is related that Reb Lezer Gordon on the way to the Beis Medrash, if he would walk past either a yeshiva or a house, and he heard a Kol Torah, and he heard what they were talking about, he would instinctively just run in and begin to talk and learning on that subject that he heard. He just couldn't hold himself back. And Ad Kedei Kach, that it said that even in Shul, when he would darshan, and he would say some sort of a pilpul, and someone in the audience would raise a question right in the middle of the drosha, he would forget that he was darshan, walk off the beam, walk up to the person, be mefalf with that person right there and there, in the fifth row, in the sixth row, wherever it was. That was the Blazer Gordon. So Ad Kedei Kach was Reb Chaim Brisker Machshev Reb Lezer Gordon, that when Reb Chaim Brisker was marrying off one of his sons, and it turned out that Reb Lezer Gordon happened to be there, he was Mechabed him right away with Siddur Kiddushin. And to bring out the great Milo of the Ahavas HaTorah that was recognized by Reb Chaim recognized the Ahavas HaTorah of Reb Lezer Gordon. So Reb Lezer Gordon, just want to mention that he was the Rav of Kelm before Telz. The Lezer Gordon became the Rav of Kelm, and he gave shurim three times a week in the yeshiva. And he would learn every Shabbos with the Alter of Kelm for a few hours. They had a Seder together, Rav Lezer Gordon. And he once said, and this is very, very important, just to realize what we're talking about. So Lezer Gordon, he said, once said, being that he had such an intimate knowledge, you know, of who the Alter from Kelm was. So he pointed out, and he said, people always think of the Alter from Kelm, and which is true, think of the great Baal Musar, which he was, Avad, that's what he stands out for. But the Blazer Gordon pointed out, and he said, that I am made, that the altar of Kelm, said nu, the entire Seder Moed, Noshim and Ezekim by heart, which amounts to something like 29 Masechtas. And he also said that the altar of Kelm could identify the source of every halach in Shulchan Aruch. So this just gives a little bit of idea. We're talking about a great Baal Musar, was a great Goyim in Torah as well, not just in Musar. The altar from Kelm could be able to sit in the sukkah and sing for 10 hours. In other words, he was so enamored with the kedusha of the sukkah and the simcha that he had, as a great Baal Musar would be able to appreciate what a yontif is. Now the schus of sitting in a sukkah, Poshet would sit and he would sing there for something for like 10 hours. Sukkah, which represents the embrace of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being in the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the privacy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what the sukkah is, represents. Would sing for 10 hours. The altar had a unique way of understanding. Interesting is the phrase that we use in the davening of Yontif, we say, Ato Bachartonu Mikol Amim. And we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you chose us among all the nations. And then there's a phrase that says, V'roim Amtonu Mikol Alashoynis. Which simply means, the Poch of Shad means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu elevated Kalasha more than all the other nations. Alashoynis means nations. V'roim Amtonu. You have elevated us, Mikol Halashoynis. The Altar von Kelm had a different pshat. I just want to mention, that's already mentioned in Sefer Chassidus, that we say many, many times, that truth always comes to one source, doesn't make a difference on which cheder you come from. Truth is truth. In any case, the Altar von Kelm taish, and as I say, they say it from Rabbi Ben Pshischa said it, the Altar von Kelm said, V'roimam tonu Mikol Halashoynis, which means as follows, a beautiful pshat. He says, the Kodesh Baruch Hu elevated us to such heights, Mikol Alashoynis, which means there's no language that can do justice to describe how high we are, how chosh we are. Remam Tono Mikol Alashoynis. In other words, there's no word in the human lexicon that is able to describe the great heights that Kodesh Baruch Hu has elevated Klal Yisrael. Remam Tono Mikol Alashoynis. The height and the madrega of Klal Yisrael transcends Loshen. There's no speech, there's no Lashon that is able to describe the godliness of Klal Yisrael. That's Roim Amtonu Mikol HaShoynis. And another of, as they say, one of his interesting taiches, and again, this is something that already, again, mentioned Sefer Chassidus, and this particular word is mentioned in the Yismach Moshe. I doubt he saw it in Yismach Moshe, but it was Machadish on his own. There's a mitzvah says in the Rais that says, Mipnei Seva Tokum, that you have to stand up for an elderly person. Mipnei Seva Tokum. It's a mitzvah says. You have to stand up for an elderly person. So the Alter Tainshin, he said, Mipnei Seva Tokum. He says, before you get old, he said, make something of yourself. Don't wait till you get old. Mipnei Seva Tokum. See that you have a chemos. See that you rise up. See that you rise up. See that you elevate up before you become old. People say, I have time. Time, still young. Why have to do it right now? No, Mipnei Seva Tokum. Make sure that you do it before. Before the Seva. Before that sets in. So again, so talking about, as we say, about the altar from Kelm, so just the interesting thing, contemporarily speaking, Yankov Kamenetsky came as a bocher to Kelm. So he walked into the Beis Medrash and no one greeted him. No one greeted him. No one gave him Shalom Aleichem. He waited Poshet for hours. Finally, someone came over and welcomed him. So Yankov complained that this was a lack of derech eretz because no one was there to greet a newcomer. So the staff accepted, interestingly, the criticism. And from then on, he says, the bocher was appointed. They appointed a bocher as official greeter. Everything was a system. You're the official greeter. You see a newcomer, you're the one that goes over. Interestingly, there's someone here in the Beit Medrash here with Davin's here. Many years ago, took a trip to Cleveland. Not sure if it was a business trip, whatever it was. And he davened a tefillah in Telzer Yeshiva. And no one came over to give him Shalom Aleichem. No one. He was very upset. So when he came home, he wrote a letter. To who did he write the letter? He writes a letter to Rav Gifter, Zechayim Lavrocha. And yes, Rav Gifter wrote him back. And I saw the letter. He wrote him back, he says, you're very, very right. And now that you have told me, he says, I'm going to make sure that does not happen again. That Bochum, the Yeshiva, I'm going to be aware of, that somebody comes in, a newcomer, there'll be somebody there, anybody that should have the service to understand that you give over and you go and you give Shalom Aleichem. But interesting, talking about self-discipline, let me just mention that Bianca would tell the story about the one day he said, interesting thing, this is already a halachic matter, and yet look how Kelm reacted to it. Bianca would say there was a particular time, he said that the Gabbai, you know, at the Kriyas HaTorah, he called up a Yisroel for the first Aliyah. called to Yisrael for the first aliyah in the place of a Kohen, because there was no Kohen present. So Yisrael became Kohen, very common. So Biankiv then noticed that a Kohen just walked in. Biankiv just noticed that Kohen just walked in. So he goes over to the Gabbai to tell him. Fine. Afterwards, the Biankiv says that he was rebuked for turning around. Remember, Kelm says, just stick here, you don't turn around no matter what. So he was rebuked, he says, for turning around, and he felt, interestingly, Rabbi Yankiv used to say that I feel that it would be important that every bocher at least to spend 6 months of his life in Kelm, because Kelm would teach you self-control and menuchas hanefesh. It's a totally different attitude how to look at the world, and to have also a happier life, and also, again, be in control of your actions and reactions, as mentioned. So let me just mention, in conclusion of this, that the altar of Slobodka, the altar of Slobodka now sent one of his best talmidim, he sent to Kelm, to the altar of Kelm. And just to tell you just some of the finest talmidim from Slobodka who were sent to Kelm by the altar, one of them was Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. Zalman Meltzer originally was in Slobodka, and the altar of Slobodka sent him to Kelm. Rabbi Zalman, of course, was the Rav of Slutsk, and later on is Rosh Yeshiva Beit Chaim Yerushalayim. And then also we have Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, the Levush Mordechai. Moshe Mordechai Epstein, right? Later the Rosh Yeshiva of Slobodka and of Chevron, Nebuchadnezzar Shechita took place in 1929. Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein, great goyim. So he also, the Alta Slobodka sent him, from Slobodka sent him to Kelm. And then you can have also the great Musar luminaries, the Musar giants that you have. Rav Leib Chassaman. Rav Chassaman was the Meshgiach of Yeshiva's Chevron, product of Kelm. Rabbi Ruchem, right? The Mashgiach of Radin, right? And Mir, product of Kelm. Rav Dessler, we're talking about. Rav Dessler is a product of Kelm. Rebel Yapian, also Mashgiach of Kfar Chassidim as he was. And who else? Rav Chatzka Levenstein, Mashgiach of Panovich. Right? And coming from Mir, but it was also a product of Kelm. The altar of Kelm passed away in 1898. Basically, but of course, the Yesoides of Musar that he taught, and those foundations are being built continuously on his teaching, and that is what we glean from again today. So, Rabbi, so as time is moving on, let's take a look at what we have over here in the Michtam Eliyahu. We are here in Michtam Eliyahu. That is page 8, I believe it is. It is Bir Inyan Midas Harachmim. Bir Inyan Midas Harachmim. We're not going to be able to complete this essay. We'll go as far as we go. And Bez Hashem will be Mamshech. We'll continue next week, Bez Hashem. And we'll review Bekitzer, short, just in summary, what we have studied today, and to be able to continue next week. Just want to mention that this particular essay, which is Bir Inyan Midas Harachmim, which basically tries to explain the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu extols Rachmanis and how the mid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how this works. When I mention that this particular essay, Bir Inyan Midas Harachmim, as you're going to see, is something that was written in around the year 1939-1940. This essay that we're going to be studying now. 1939, it was soon after the outbreak of World War II. An interesting thing that Rav Dessler had a circle of Talmidim in England that had possibly been scattered as a result of the outbreak of the war. So this essay basically was written as a Shir Biksav. It was not something he was able to say it, didn't have the opportunity to say it, but he wrote it down. Biksav was a lecture in writing, and it circulated in installments, possibly, in an effort to be able to maintain contact. This is how it was. You have to realize those days didn't have copy machines. So when Rav Dessler had it written, or typewritten actually, it was with the maximum of carbon copies possible that was shaykh to have it done, because there was no other way. Similarly also, there was Shurim and Halacha. Rav Dessler also gave Shurim and Halacha that also circulated at that time with his Talmidim. So basically what you're going to find out, what the basic discussion of this essay is, of the nature of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha Pratis. We'll discuss Hashgacha Pratis, which is a Kodesh Baruch Hu's providence. Also, it'll discuss the criteria when a Kodesh Baruch Hu uses Midas Adin, the Midah of justice, right, and Midas Harachmim, which is the Midah, of course, of mercy, when they're applied. And we're going to find out a little bit about Yetzer Toiv and Yetzer Hara to understand that a little bit better. And Rav Dessler, as we see, going on further, you'll notice, and this is something we saw in previous essays also, through Rav Dessler, the idea of Olam Haba was something that was real, was not something in the abstract. For us, Olam Haba, of course, is the Yanom. something which is very far. We hear about it, sometimes we talk about it. You ask a Yid, do you believe it? It says, yes, an imam, and I believe it, but it's something which is abstract. Pravdestra Oilam Habo was just as real as Oilam Hazeh. And a matter of fact, going through the essays, you can get a little bit more than an inkling to see how in this world, through the spiritual experience of this world, we're able to really touch Oilam Habo. And therefore, making Oilam Habo, turning it into something which is tangible. Taking it out of the theoretical into something which is actual. Because the spiritual existence on this world, if we really touch and tap into it properly, then we are already able to experience something, a glimpse of the future world, which is Olam Haba, already in Olam Hazeh. And this is through the teachings of Avdestra that he focused on a lot. And so on. Just want to mention, just want to quote you a line, which seems almost to be a nevuah. It really seems to be something which is prophetic in Ishir, which he talks about the ability of a Yid. The ability of a Yid, he says, to be able to accept from a Kodesh Baruch Hu even the strictest of Midas Adin and calamities with unshaken faith. That's the Koich of a Yid. That no matter what situation where life turns, a Yid's faith is unshakable. I want to mention that the Holocaust was not to start for another 2 years, and Rav Dessler wrote 2 years before it started, he writes the following. He writes that this burning faith is needed more than ever now. 2 years before the Holocaust. This burning faith, he writes, is needed more than ever now when troubles and persecutions overwhelm us, he says, in greater measure than ever before in the long and bitter history of our Golus. It's very interesting. So as we're going to see that this essay really stands as a monument. The monument to the Jews' unshakable faith. The Kodesh Baruch Hu's goodness, even in the face of something that seems to be ultimate catastrophe. So what we're going to take a look here, Rabbi Yisrael, let's take a look here. As we start here, Bir Inyan Midas Harachamim. Explain what that means. He starts as follows. Perik Aleph, you see, Yerushas Avoseinu Agdoshim, which is the heritage of our forefathers. Basically, what Rav Dessler is going to pose quite a number of questions. We say in the davening, many, many times over, a few times a day, we say, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak v'Elokei Yaakov. We draw on the fact that we have Zechus Avos. Rav Dessler wants to understand and pose a very fundamental philosophical question. If you don't deserve mercy, if you don't deserve, right, all the benefit, you don't deserve all the goodness that Kodesh Baruch Hu was ready to give, how does it help you that the fact that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were your forefathers? How do we glean from those benefits if we ourselves are not worthy? As he goes on to very fundamentally, even to show, it seems so incomprehensible, as he uses the following phraseology, as you'll take a look. As a matter of fact, he has a different opinion on how to understand what does it mean that we glean on the schus of the others. And he starts out as follows. He says, Hine regilim lachshuv. He says, we are accustomed to thinking. Right, that's the usual way we're thinking. Right, that being that we are descendant, right, of such great people, saintly others, we had saintly forefathers, Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. So therefore, hinenu miyuchosim bein Hashem Yisbarach. That's the common way of understanding, right? Being we are descendants of such great forefathers, so therefore we become privileged. We're especially privileged in the eyes of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Therefore, being that we are privileged. So that means, right, that Kodesh Baruch Hu will not judge us according, right, to strict justice, but he'll exercise leniency. Why? For what reason? Only because we are descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Shaharei b'nei oihavov v'nachnef. Oh, we are the descendants of his oihavov, those that Kodesh Baruch Hu loves. We are descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, whom Kodesh Baruch Hu loves. V'roi shirachmeinu. And therefore we believe, right? We believe that we deserve rachmonis. Well, a haptois as dineinu, and therefore Hakadosh Baruch Hu will tip, right, our din, our mishpat, letzad atoif. Hakadosh Baruch Hu therefore will bend the truth, as it were. He will not judge us according, right, to the strict tenets of justice, but Hakadosh Baruch Hu will show mercy, right, even though justice would demand otherwise. Justice and truth would demand otherwise. But just simply because we are Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, so now we're going to be, right? Now we're going to be in a position where we'll be able to have Rachman. Mipnei Ahavoso, he says, Lebnei Yehava, because Baruch Hu's love to the descendants of those that he loves. V'nachnu choshvim, And we tend to think, Shizuhi HaYerusha HaGdoyla. We try to think that, in fact, this is the great heritage, right? This is the Gvaldigus Chus. This is the great heritage, Asher Yerashnum of Aseinu HaGdoyshim Anake HaRuach. This is the heritage that we receive from our forefathers who were spiritual giants. They were spiritual giants, Anake HaRuach. Spiritual giants, Asher Korvul Asher Mizbarach Yoysa Mechalodim, explains how gigantic they were. That they were closer to Hashem than anyone on earth. Than anyone on earth they were closest. So now, we glean, right? We yarshin. Therefore, we have a heritage from them, and that is, right? And that is, Hainu, it would seem to be that ki imnase kechol asher yachpas lovavenu. It seems that we do whatever we want, right? We do whatever we want. Mekomo koim lo yasa lono Hashem uma. Akadosh Baruch will not do anything bad to us. Right? Akadosh Baruch, we can do whatever we want, and Akadosh Baruch will not punish us. Why? Ki ach naskol, all we have to do to Hashem says, remember, Ravom is Kivyak, just have to remember that. Just have to mention that. Ki ach naskol is asher also vaseinu ohava. It seems all we have to do is just remind Akadosh Baruch Hu, right, of the great deeds of our ovos. V'chol asher chotonu yimochol lanu, kerega, in a second, instantaneously, Akadosh Baruch Hu. Why? Because we say, l'kei Avram, l'kei Yisrael, l'kei Yaakov, we always do this. Aval ha'im be'emes muvan lanu hadover hazeh. He said, can that be right? He says, Ms. Boyne, no. Now, can we understand this concept properly? How are we supposed to understand that? What does it mean that Yerusha's always? What does it mean that we are Bnei Avram Yisrael V'Yaakov, and therefore somehow, how is that going to help us? And he goes on, and he raises the following questions. As you can see, he has a number of questions. He says, Aleph, the first question. He says, Ha'im mishpat nochenhu. Is this fair and judge? Look how he poses the question. Is this really fair? He says, "Asher hadayin yates mishpat," that a judge, right, would give a lenient decision to ben ahuvoi, right, in favor of someone who happens to be the son of a friend, right? A judge will render a lenient decision to the son of a friend, right? But when the same thing happens, right, to someone else, then the judge will apply the full rigor of the law to another person who did not happen to have the privilege of being born the son of a friend. So that means that two people do the same, right? Will do the same avla, but the one happens to be privileged that he's born, that he's the son of a friend, right? Son of Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov, he's the descendant of Avraham Yitzchak V'Yaakov. So therefore there's leniency. Is that fair? Is that fish? He says, is it fair and just for a dayim to yates mishpat ben ahuvoi? If a dayim has before him the son of a friend, that is a different law for the son of a friend, min hadin huamiti l'rachmeyu, right? To show him rachmonis, veso achar, and someone else, shlo his daman lo ilu hivolid etzel ahuvoi shaladayim, and someone else who is not privileged, right, to be in that position, to be the son of a friend of the dayim, yishpoit al dover oisachet mamish, when it comes to the exact same avera, kashachota ben ahuvoi, like the son of a friend, kachol choymer amishpot, to him he's going to apply the full rigor of the law. But the other one who happened to be privileged to be born to, as the son of a friend is going to be a different, it'll be a different judgment. Aye, Eifoy who had tzedek v'ayosher, he said. Where would be the tzedek in Yosher? How would that be appropriate? Would this be just? So how does it work? So we seem to be privileged than more than all the Umas Oilon. Why? Because we're Bnei Avraham Yisrael V'Yaakov. What does that mean? So if they were not privileged to be born in the position of being Bnei Avraham Yisrael V'Yaakov, we were privileged. So that means our Maisa Avera is any less than theirs, and therefore we deserved leniency. And base, second question. It seems, he says, Ha'im Rishoyim Lahatis Mishpat, would one be allowed to tip justice, Ularachim Bishvil Ahava, and to have Rachmona simply because of love, Haloikosa B'Toyret, it says clearly, Leisate Mishpat. In other words, it would seem that such a proceeding, to take in consideration, right, where you come from, would seem to be against perverting justice. Leisate Mishpat. The Torah says you can't pervert justice. It seems we are perverting justice. Because Baruch Hu takes in consideration because who you came from. So because of the Ahava, because of the Ahava, because Baruch Hu has to the forefathers, therefore we have a different law. Then we have a different set of rules. How do we understand that? And then he says, number three, Val Kol Eile, and above all, he says, Hein Hashem Yizborach Hu Mekoyer HaEmes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all truth. Mitzuyosa Yemes. He's truth itself. He's not just the source of all truth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is truth itself. V'i'efsher b'shum ponim. Right? Litzayer lonu dover she'einenu emes. By Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's impossible to imagine the slightest deviation of truth. Deviation of truth is only possible by a human being, as he says. Ela eitzel nivra. Only by a human being. Only by a human being you can have deviation of truth, as he points out. Only by him you could have that. And he points out further, because first of all, a human being, shemitziyusoi behester vasheker imoitomit. In other words, regarding first of all a human being, the light of truth is also many times obscured. He doesn't even see the light of truth. He doesn't even recognize truth. So the light of truth is many times obscured. But by any, he said, by never, he says, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he said, by any stretch of the imagination, right, is shaykh that anything is obscured, that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not see the truth. There's nothing that is hidden. There's nothing that obscures the truth. The truth is clearly open. This is not shaykh, this is not possible in any way to obscure the truth. And therefore, anything that is not 100% true, anything that's not completely true, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees everything. Mikol Tzad, if it's not true all around, not a halfway true, three quarters true. If it's not true, Mikol Tzad, the Yikon is the fun of his Baraklau. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not allow it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not allow anything which is not completely true. Vim Kain, if that's the case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, is the quintessential Metzias of truth, essence of truth. So Maze again, so what does it mean, Asher Nevakesh Hashem Yisborach? So how, therefore, what sense does it make to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, show us mercy in the merit of our forefathers? But where's the truth? Where's the truth? How does that allow Kibiyochel HaKadosh Baruch Hu to judge us differently? How do we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shirachmeinu B'Zchus Aviseinu, that He should have Rachmonis on us in Zchus, He says, of the Olos, Ahuvav, who we love? HaKadosh Baruch Hu will certainly not make any decision which is not in accordance with truth and justice. It's not shaykh. And therefore, Vim Bedin Al Piyem is Chuyav Nechaz V'Sholem. And if justice says we're guilty, right, if justice says we're guilty, Oibazoi says, Eze emes yuchalis barachimim. What truth can there be in mercy? So how do you understand the concept of mercy? What does mercy mean? Mercy means to have mercy. You don't deserve it. So by what, he says? How does it work? How does the union of mercy work? How does the word barachimim? And especially through schusavois, that is something, because we're privileged to be b'nei Abraham and Yaakov. Somebody else, right, who's not privileged to be born in that position, therefore he's more guilty than we are. So why is he more guilty? Why does that person deserve, right, that the full rigor of the law applies to him and not to those that happen to be, as he said, Benoy Havov, happen to have the privilege to be the son of a friend, the judge would therefore paskin differently, would judge differently. How do we understand that? And then finally he goes on to say, Ramu Chazal, Sheyesh Madreigas, is another thing. Chazal told us that sometimes there are circumstances, it's the Gemara on Shabbos actually, the Gemara says that there are madregas, means there are circumstances, v'hoyedoyrus and generations, ashetam obem schus ovois. In other words, that's another thing. Schus ovois, the Gemara tells us, is not something that's absolute. There are certain situations, there are certain circumstances where schus ovois doesn't help you. And in addition also, there are certain generations in which schus ovois, again, ceases to be. See, it no longer operates. Rav Dessen wants to understand what, he said, does this depend on? Was it depend on when Zchus Ovis is viable and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes it in consideration? And what is the cause of, he says, Bameh Tolu Inyan Zeh? What does it depend on that certain circumstances there's no Zchus Ovis to be used, certain generations there's no Zchus Ovis to be used? Is it Im Berichuk HaDairis Min HaOvis? Is it simply a question of length of time? How far, how many generations away from the Ovis? Is that what it depends on? In other words, if you're too far away from the Ovois, maybe then the Zchus Ovis cannot go so far? Is that what it means? Does it mean, Im Berichuk HaDoiris Ben Ovois, Al Pi Asher Yar B'Mispra HaDoiris? Does it merely depend how much time has elapsed since the Ovois were alive? Or as to how many generations that separate us from the Ovois? Or maybe there are other factors also involved, as he says. There may be other factors that causes that Zchus Ovis doesn't operate. So what is that? How do we understand Zchus Ovis? It does work and it doesn't work. What is it, the cause, on what does it depend on? Now before Adesso even attempts to explain it, he starts just and he pauses the general attitude of what should be the attitude of a Yid in looking and reading world events, situations in his life, There are many situations in a person's life that raises a lot of questions. There are a lot of questions sometimes on a global scale, how to try to explain why are certain things happening in the world at large. He has questions. And therefore he questions HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hanhoga, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And then a person may have questions, and maybe even more so when it's personal. There's certain situations that happen in a person's life, many different areas, and he has questions. As you say, why me? Why me? By the way, when things go good, never ask why me. Never ask why good. Why me? Why did you give me all this good? Never ask why me. Chavishom goes the other way. Then all of a sudden, why me? Then there's a question. Here's a question. So, from this it says, first he puts down, lays down the foundation. Omnam kein. So I want you to understand, he says. He says, a person who has not learned and does not know Torah, he says, Shailus ke'elu, he says, menakris es moichir. Questions like we have just asked now, Rav Dessler said, all these questions, he said, a person really has not studied Torah properly, he says, these questions may be very troublesome. He says, how does Chusovis work? What does it mean? Just because we happen to be born in the position that we are descendant from Yitzchak Yaakov, what does it mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, tips the scale? HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore goes and he bends the truth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore uses Midas HaRachmim. And for others who are not in that position, it's different. So we have all kinds of kashas. We don't understand. We ask kasha to try to explain HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hanhoga. So that's the first starts out and to say that basically a person who has not learned and a person who is not aware, of course, these kashas are very troublesome. And even if it is troublesome, now, assume you have no answers. And there are more questions than answers, usually. But Rav Dessler said, the attitude of a Yid, before even attempting to try to answer anything, the attitude of a Yid is, Vimhu ish yosher hoylech. He says, if it happens to be a person, if it's a straightforward person, which means a person who has Amunah Bashem. Says Rav Dessler, yoyim el nafsho. Whenever he has a question, he says the following to himself. He says, lo yodati. Says, so I don't know. So he says, so I don't know all the answers. Lo yadati. Avlim gam lo yadati. But so what? So just because I don't know, ein ze poigeya chaz visholim b'menosu. But just because I don't know the answer, that does not have an effect on my basic belief in Torah. I mean, it's always that. The truth is the logic that a person is supposed to use. When you have a question, just like in any case, and if you have a mathematical problem, you don't know the answer. But you know there's going to be a mathematician out there who's smarter than he's going to have the answer. And if he doesn't, there's somebody above him. So there's always going to be somebody, possibly, who's going to have the answer. And even if he doesn't, but if somebody would be smarter than him, go to the smartest person in the world that we have today, Lomoshel, and he doesn't have an answer. But let's say there would be somebody smarter than him, maybe he would have had the answer. So the point is, just because you, with your limited mind, doesn't have an answer, that does not establish fact. That doesn't establish fact. You have a question because you don't know the answer. But the question that you have, there is out there somebody who does have the answer. And certainly in the way, in Klal Yisrael throughout the Torah, you talk about Gedolei Rishayim and you talk Tanoim Namaroim, and even when it comes to a point where they don't have the answer, but not knowing the answer is not what determines truth or not. It's just a question, like anything else. There is an answer out there. So just because you don't know the answer isn't there. There is an answer. Doesn't make a difference. The answer doesn't become true just because you don't know it or you do know it. That doesn't make it true. I determine fact because I understand or I don't understand. So that determines truth in the world. Who are you? So my male Rav Dessler says right away. So he says to himself, so I may have a lot of questions. But you know what? Even if I don't know the answer, ein ze poigei again, chaz shon b'manose. That has no effect. It has no effect, he says, on my emunah. But Rav Yosef Chaim Zonenfeld says, you know, we say in the davening, we say, ein kolakeinu. Ein kamalkeinu, there's no one like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? There's ein kamashenu, and so on and so forth. Then, we start asking questions. Michalakeinu, Mikadeneinu, right? So it should have been the other way around. First you ask the question, then you give the answer. When it comes to Muna, you don't ask questions. First you establish fact. Ein kamalkeinu, the fact is there's no one like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there's no one. Once you absorb that, now you can start asking. Michalakeinu, you can ask questions. First you have the answer. You have the answer before the question. First, you state a fact. That is the klal, no matter what. Ein kelekein, there's no one like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ein kamalkein, kamashem. Now that you have absorbed, now you know this to be fact, now you can start to be chayker, ahen, ahin. Because no matter what, you already have the fact you have already before you. So then you can say, me, and so on. And get involved and start to delve into the situation a little bit deeper. So then says Rav Dessler Azoy. And that says very simply. I mean, what kind of a Balgaiva are you? Adif Eshtaisnish, therefore, right, that changes. Because you understand or don't understand, right, that changes the facts. That changes whether Torah is true or not, because you understand or you don't understand. So now, so your mind is going to decide whether the Torah is true or not. Person said to himself, am I really even capable of understanding everything? Don't you understand? Somebody came once asked the Chazon Ish, you know, it's a certain thing that happened, it's a certain tragedy, certain situation. It's poshut, ununderstandable. If he's tight, he has kashas on Rabbi Nishlam. He says, you want to understand Rabbi Nishlam? He says, which is a human being. Toysus was a human being. The Moich doesn't even understand the Toysus. So you understand how Kodesh Baruch Hu is on Hoge. Just it's an illustration of how limited the mind is. Ashveshikul Gemura, you don't understand, right? And these are human beings that wrote this. Right? So you understand how Kodesh Baruch Hu is on Hoge? Just to show you. And so in any area of life, you know how limited your mind is. Olai rak lahakis is avdesl esu amuna kitohirihi. The idea is, a yid clearly, right, a yid says to himself, I have complete confidence, he says, right, in the purity of amuna. V'chol ma'ashom chachomen uzal and everything that our chachom said, hakol emes. Right, everything is true. Beli shum sofik. That's fact by me. That's fact by me, whatever they said. And the fact, he said, that I don't understand. You know why? Because my comprehension is limited. Not because there's something questionable about what they have said. That may be possible what they have said, maybe it's not really true. What they have said is completely true. The fact that I don't understand is I don't understand. That's where the emphasis is. I don't understand. Right? The poor havana that I have, the kosh hasugosi, the limited hasoga that I have. And as a matter of fact, now, so you don't even understand what Chachomim are said. The depth of the Chachomim, you don't even capable to understand. How much more deeper, he says, are the thoughts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the ways of Hashem. Asher gedolim lo yasigu. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that even great minds, the greatest minds are not able to grasp HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways. So how can I expect to understand everything? He said, "The Echa Kavik Yualai Lahasik Hakol." So how can I expect that I should be able to understand everything if the greatest of minds are not able to fathom and understand always what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways? So how do I expect I should understand? So he says further. He says, "Zehu Be'emes." He says, "This is the truth." Ashitzorach Sheyachshoy. He says, "This is the way." He means a sensible person thinks when you come up with difficulties of this kind. He says. Mishlo yodav leyovin peshadover. In other words, somebody has a question and doesn't understand. This is the way you have to think. You have to think is, I don't understand. My mind is too weak. My mind is limited, as he points out. Vegam onu tzrichin tomad ladas kikenhu. And he says, we do very well to bear this in mind constantly. He says, it's very essential, very important. It will do us very well to always remember this cloud. Kashim is damenes tofanenu ezekushim. He says, whenever he says we come across, he says, some kasha, some apparent contradiction, let's say. We have a kasha. You have a contradiction of some sort. As he says, loineida bira ezedover, right? And we fail to understand a certain matter. So, bevadai oleinu ladas olahakir. So we have to know and we have to recognize clearly that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's thoughts are very deep. Uma onu, uma mandregis nivra. Who are we? We're just mere human beings, he says. We are mere human beings. How do we expect to be able to understand afilo malochim? Even angels who are much greater in their hasoge, in their comprehension, fail to understand the Darkei Hashem. Even Malachim, he says, Asher yuchel agi l'day yidias oimek, he says, Asher yuchel agi l'day yidias oimek emitis mishpotoi. That's even Malachim, he says. Even Malachim don't have the capacity to be able to understand that. And therefore, says Rav Dessler, so Elamai, so the point is that the reason that the kashas bothers us, that's all part of the avoid of the Yetzer Hara. Because the Yetzer Hara wants to put us in a situation where we have a predicament, where we have tension with our faith, and then we have to struggle with our faith. That's all part of the Yetzer Hara, to try to be mevalable, try to confuse us, not to understand what he had just posited, what he just mentioned before. So therefore, Valeinu Levare. So therefore, we have to make it clear to ourselves that these kind of thoughts, all these kind of kashis that become troublesome to us, Ki kushis ke'elu heimo, rak asher yebalbel eson ha-Yetzer Hara. It's only, he says, these problems are the Yetzer Hara, because it is his purpose, laman hachlish yesu amune shibilibenu. Because that's the tachlis of the Yetzer Hara, to weaken, right, our innermost amune. And the truth is, he says, that if we go right very, very clearly into the depth of our hearts, that we will see, in fact, that this is the involvement. Nira v'novin kikushes ka'elu boyis eleinu, all the kashas, the source of it comes, bishtad lusa shalei yisohor, leman harchikeinim unemis. In order that to deflect us from the truth. We should not be able to see the truth. So once you have this idea, once you have to understand, you're not capable, not just you don't have to understand everything. You're not even capable of understanding everything. Not capable. In the same way, but much more. Can you expect a little ant, right? Expect a little ant to try even to comprehend, right, what a human being is doing. The gap between a little ant, right, to understand what a human being is, right, is millions of miles of distance from a little ant to be able to understand a human being. That gap is multiplied by millions of more miles, the gap between a human being and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So how do you expect to understand the ways of a Kodesh Baruch Hu if a little ant you understand is not able to understand a human being? You understand that? The same idea. So we, Lagaba Kodesh Baruch Hu, is much, much further, the difference and the gap between our intelligence and Kibyochel Kodesh Baruch Hu. So once you get that clear, that anything that you have or anything that is because you're not capable of understanding, then the truth is, then the kashas don't mean anything, he says. It just means it's a weakness. The weakness is in you, within yourself, he says. And you have the emunah in front of you. You have the emunah in front of you, and that's what you go by. He said, Zeu Hamogen, this is the shield that you need. In other words, the shield to protect yourself from all these kashas, from all these troublesome tensions and struggles. The shield is, right? The shield is that just because I don't understand, that does not affect my belief. That is a very important foundation. That's what he says. Zeu Hamogen, this is the shield asher aleinu losim lefaneinu tomid. Lamayin lo yagi aleinu, this will prevent, right, from falling into the shafts of the Yetzer Hara. Chitzei Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara shoots the arrows. Keeps shooting the arrows. Betaines ukushes, right? All different types of questions and arguments. Ein mispar, right? Ein mispar, without end. His purpose is simply ladichenu menoemes ala sheker, because he wants to remove us from the truth down to sheker, to falsehood, and menakdusha ala tumen. So the nekuda is that kashas should never determine whether we believe or not. That's the basic nekuda. Because kasha is only kasha because you don't understand, but there's somebody else who understands. And there's somebody even smarter, may understand more. And ultimately, there's somebody who understands. And if not this generation, well, there's the previous generation who understood it. So the truth is not dependent. Truth is not established by your own understanding or not. You're just one person, and with a very limited mind at that. Says Rav Dessler further. And he says, Alama mu'ushar imanu. However, he says, we can be so happy, he says. Rav Dessler said, Ma mu'ushar imanu. He said, we can be so happy. Ashreinu matoiv chalkeinu. How fortunate we are. Umanoim goreleinu. He says, how pleasant is our lot. He says, Kizikanu Hashem Yisbar b'chol toiv b'likvul. HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed upon us, he says, so much good, he says, limitless. V'yitein lonos rabbeinu HaKadoshim, which means HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us our Rebbes, he gave us the Tanoim, gave us the Maroim, with all the literature that we have, all the rabbinic literature that we have, and so much is there, at least to help us, to guide us, to minimize the troubles and the struggles that we have. Because Baruch has given us our Rabbi Seinu, have given us the great Chachomim to teach us and to be able to alleviate our tension. With a great understanding, he says, Ashubaroicha binosom, with the breadth of their wisdom, Yodu Harbemoi, they did know. Ubetuvam Hagodl. And he says, and in their goodness, right, Nostum Gamlonu Litoy Merei Vatoiv, from the abundance of their knowledge, they shared with us. They shared with us from the Roiva Toiv Ashazochu Heimoboy, from all the Toiv and the knowledge that they were Zoicha to acquire, that they sharing with us. Heim Gilulonu Soides Nefloim. They revealed to us the wondrous secrets of the Torah, the hidden wisdom that's found in the Torah. Sisrei Torah V'imke Chochma, the hidden matters of the Torah, the very depth of wisdom. Vayehi, he says, Be'oirem Lonu Oir Godol. And Amelie says, what they explain, Biuram, means what they explain is they shed tremendous light. Their explanation shed tremendous light. And if we carefully look into their holy words, Hakoil Yimtzeborur, you'll find that everything is clear. Hakoil Nochoim, everything is correct. He says, and Hakoil Muvim, he says, and everything, he says, is understood. Hakoil medugdig betachlis adigduk. Everything falls into place with utmost precision. Keroyul emes agomer, which befits something that's absolutely true. He says, after we go through the writings and the literature, he says, our great rebbes, then you ask yourself, how could I even have had a kasha to begin with? In other words, he uses the lotion, he says, when you find out the truth, and you look at the kasha again, you go back to the question, that was so troublesome originally, it's not here anymore. In other words, he says, kushim mikor aleisa. That means? It means it didn't really even begin to be a problem. It wasn't a problem. It was a mistake. But that's those words. Toys hoysev loy kushe. It was a mistake, not a kasha. Instead of a kasha. You know, he said, the Beis Halevi used to say, he used to ask him, the famous thing Rav Zevin brings in a sefer as he describes the B'chaim Brisker. He said, B'chaim Brisker, you know, when he basically started the new innovative Derech Halim with the Halimut of Brisk, you know, very analytical, basically to break things down, to their originality and the understanding and the basis, how the halachas are formulated. This halach is based on this, and this halach, which appear to be the same. Rabbi Chaim was able to break it down, right, to its logical sources. And so when that started out, so Beis Halev used to say, so Rabbi Chaim brought up this new derech. He says, so there's a big difference. He says, when somebody asks me a kasha, or when somebody asks Rabbi Chaim a kasha. So what's the difference? He says like this. Somebody asks me a kasha, a good kasha, and if I'm able to give a teres, we both have a hanoah. We both enjoy it. The person who asks the kasha has known he asked a good kasha. And I have hanoah that I gave a good teres. He says, when somebody asks Reb Chaim a kasha, he says, nobody has hanoah, because Reb Chaim showed the kasha was not a kasha. The kasha was not a kasha, then the teres Reb Chaim gave was not really a teres either. He says, you made a mistake. He says, nobody has hanoah. The one asked the kasha doesn't have hanoah, and Reb Chaim doesn't have hanoah. He didn't give a teres. He showed you just learned wrong, just understood wrong. There's no kasha, there's no teres. But if you ask me a kasha, he says, everybody has hanoah. The one asked the kasha was a kasha, and I gave him a teres. That is the difference. That's what the Blessed is trying to show you. That when you delve into a little bit, and you find a little bit of the Sisrei HaTorah and the depth of the wisdom of the Torah, then you find out that in fact he says that Kushim Mikor Aleisa, the Kasha Bay didn't even begin. It was a mistake from its inception. Toysoya, Cain who is in, that's the truth, Becholah Kushis. I want you to know, that's the same thing he says with all the Kashas, he says. Ashal de Yegiyah Ve'omal B'Div Rabbi Seinu, just use effort, just toil in the words of our Rabbi Seinu, of our sages. Nuchel, he says, Lehovin is Biyum, then we will understand. So Rabbi says, okay, so we're going to stop here for now. We go a little bit to the sheet and see a little bit also about the koyach of ovois, because this article, even though we didn't get yet to really to the crux of what he's trying to do, is just the hagdama. Rav Das is bringing us into this idea of what does it mean that we glean from the schus of the ovois. But this is the way he starts right away. All right. So let's take a look, Rabbi. So let's take a look at the sheet. Take a look a little bit. You know, we're talking about, Rav Dessler started out with, that's the beginning of the article. The inyan of how are we able to glean from Schus Ovis. So we have a little bit here of it's a very interesting mamorim here in Ashkofe regarding our attitude and to find out how to look upon a relationship between fathers and sons. B'nei Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, the Schus of the Ovis upon ourselves. But here we have a Gemara, right, which tells us something which may not be too exciting, but more frightening, I says, than exciting. Let's take a look here. Gemara Sanhedrin Daf Nun Beis. That's a Gemara needs a lot of beer. Tanya Hora Meir Oimer. Ma Talmud Loimer, it says, Esovio Hi Mechalelis. Remember, that is by Bas Ishkoyen. Remember the posik? Ibas Ishkoyen Kisei Chelisnois. The Torah says in Parish Zemur. Ibas Ishkoyen, who embarked and behaved immorally. Bas Ishkoyen Kisei Chelisnois. So the Torah says, she's a Bas Koyim, right? So she defiles, she desecrates her father. It's a bezoin to the father. Esovio hi mechalelis. She's a Bas Koyim. So Rav Meir says, Ma Talmud Loimer, what does it mean, Esovio hi mechalelis? It means, interesting thing, it's a frightening thing. If a Koyim has a daughter who does something, behaves so immorally, you know what? We take away the privileges of a Koyim. In a certain sense, like we blame the father. Shim hoyu nohagim by koydish, right? If till now we dealt with him nohagim by choil, so now we treat him like, so to speak, like a commoner. Koloid nohagim by bezoyim. If you gave him honor till now, now it's bezoyindik. Now it's the opposite of honor. Oimrim Orushizu Yolad Orushizu Gideil. All of a sudden, we throw a curse upon him. Orushu Yotzuzu Machalotzov. Curse is someone, right, who has such progeny coming out of his loins. Right? Yotzuzu Machalotzov. Fine, but look at the next member. Look what Ravashi says. It's an unbelievable member. Ravashi Keman Karinen Rishu Barishir. Ravashi says, today, if you see a Rosh, we say Rosh, son of a Rosh. Vafilu Rishir Bat Tzadkaya. In other words, you have a Tzadik Hador. He had Nebuchadnezzar went off the derech. It comes out according to this Gemara. Ravashi says, we call the guy Rosh of Ben Rosh. On what basis? He says, Kahaitan, like Rameir. Rameir says, whatever the Baskoyan does, Asavio he mechalelus, and ever the father suffers the consequences. So what does that mean? So if a tzaddik happens to have a son as a Rosh, the Gemara says, right? So you call him Rosh Ben Rosh. It's a tzaddik. The top is a tzaddik. So right away the Mabit, take a look here. Take the Mabit. The Mabit comes on. The Mabit, by the way, right, lived in the 1500s. As a matter of fact, he was born in the year 1500. He was born in Greece. He's Ramoshe Mitrani. The Mabit is the son of the Maharit, of Rabbi Yosef of Trani. Trani was from Italy. The family name was called Trani because they came from Trani. And they go further, descendants of Rabbi Yeshaya de Trani. That's the Tosfos Rid. Tosfos Rid, Rabbeinu Yeshaya de Trani. Come from Italy. That's going back very early. And the Mabit, later on, was Oyla Teretz Yisrael. And he was one of the Gedolim in Tzfas. As a matter of fact, he was part of the Bezen, in the Bezen together with the Beis Yosef. Is part of the Bezen together with the Beis Yosef, and indeed, when the Beis Yosef was Nifter, the Mabit, Rabbeinu Moshe, the Mabit became the Rosh Bezen. Notice he took the Mokim, the Beis Yosef was the Rosh Bezen, of that particular Bezen, the Mabit was promoted, he became the Rosh Bezen, Mamish b'mokim the Beis Yosef. The correspondence of the Mabit in his day was to the Radbaz was Rav Mitzrayim, and also Rav Tzal Ashkenazi, the Mechaber of the Shittim Mukabesis, also the Alshech. There's correspondence between him and the Mabit. And the tshuvas came from all over. And the tshuvas Mabit basically have over 800 tshuvas in the Shas tshuvas Mabit. And there's correspondence between him and Rabbi Yosef Karo as well. And the Beis Yosef. There's correspondence and so on and so forth. Just interesting thing is that in there's some halachic debates between him and the Beis Yosef where they did not see eye to eye. The Mabit did not see eye to eye, which there was, they say, it resulted in some ill feelings between the two of them. There was some ill feelings between the two of them, between the Mabit and the Beis Yosef, and Rabbi Yosef Karo. But it's interesting to point out that the Mabit's son, the Mabit had a son whose name was Rabbi Yosef Trani. Actually, the Rabbi Yosef Trani was the Marit, the other way around. The Rabbi Yosef son was the Marit. So he writes, actually, in the Hagdoma to Tshuvas Marit, that his father visited Rabbi Yosef Karo during his last sickness, and the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, gave him a special bracha on his deathbed, so to speak, like they made sholem before the Beis Yosef passed away. They made sholem among them. So anyway, so the Mabit here discusses this Gemara. What does it mean if someone has a son of Rosha? So he's a Rosha ben Rosha. So now the father is also a Rosha as a Kim Tachos. So he says very quickly. He says this is the middle. You see that we cut out Mamish. We just took out. Wasn't necessary. Time is very short here. It says Gam Nemrezu Eina Kiposhta. But Nemra called Tzadik. Oh, when the Gemara says that, right, that the Tzadik is the son of Rosha, you can call him Rosha ben Rosha. It's not for every Tzadik. It's not like every Tzadik. Not in every Tzadik should b'noi Rosha. Guess what? Then all of a sudden, then you're casting aspersions on the opposite. Avraham Avinu also had a Yishmael. Right? Yeah? And the Yitzchak Avinu had Yaakov and Esau. So now, Chas v'Sholom, you're going to call somebody has a son of Russia, all of a sudden you're going to say that the father also, you can be pagan. Elishesh Hefresh ben Tzadik l'Tzadik. There's a chilik in how great the Tzadik is. Here's a very interesting thing. Because the word Tzadik, you see, is applied from one end of the spectrum to the other. Kebaki. Hokelius Baruch is called a Tzadik. Tzadik Hashem b'chol d'rochav. So Kosh Baruch is called a Tzadik. Noach is also called a Tzadik. Now, are they the same Tzadik? Noach is a Tzadik. He's a human being, he's a Tzadik. But Hashem is called a Tzadik. Tzadikim is the same Adrega. Obviously, you can have the same tzaddik, but it's not the same tzaddik. Because Baruch Hu's shame tzaddik is on a much higher level than Noach is tzaddik. And not only that, every year in Kol Yisrael, the Kol Yisrael nikro tzaddikim, right? He says, "Va'amich kolim tzaddikim." Azochet tzaddikim. Dibistochet tzaddik. Dibistat tzaddik. Here's that tzaddik. Toaz that tzaddik. And that tzaddik. That tzaddik. That's a story of a push the yid. You know, he had an eye. He wanted to be mishadik with grace yiches. What mishadik? We know it's Torah. He said to Rabbi, he says, Rabbi says, why do you want to be mishadach with me? Why mishadach with me? After all, it says Vamech Kulam Tzadikim. So Benechorchet Tzadik. So he says, you're right. He says, you be Mishadach with a Tzadik like you are, and I'll be Mishadach with a Tzadik like I am. How's that Tzadik? So you're a kind of, that Tzadik, not that Tzadik, she says to him. And he goes on further. Avimelech also calls himself a Tzadik. Hagoy Gam Tzadik Taharoik. He says, I'm right. I did not have Misa. I didn't know. I don't know. You said that Yitzchak is your sister. You said your wife is your sister. Comes that Tzadik. Avimelech even a Tzadik. The Torah calls him Tzadik. In that Loshim, the Tzadik, Loshim Tzadik is you. It means not Chayv Misa. So you find different levels of Tzadik and so on and so on. Anyway, the Nekudah that he wants to point out is, it's not, when it says you're allowed to call Erosha ben Tzadik, you're allowed to call him Erosha ben Rosha, it's not talking really about a Tzadik that we're talking about. It's talking about a Tzadik who's technically a Tzadik. You could have a Tzadik, because by the basic definition of a tzaddik is, you have roiv zochi, you can have a million averis. If you have a million and one mitzvahs, then you're already a tzaddik. Roiv zochi is, I have a million averis. Technically a tzaddik. So if you have a tzaddik, he says, and you have a son of Rosha, that says them a bit, maybe Rosha ben Rosha, he says. Because you do have a lot of averis, and look what a son you produced. Anyway, that's the marit. But I want to show you something. Look here from Rav Shlomo Kliger. Look at the next piece, very quickly, Rav Shlomo. Then Imre Shefer, he says, Imre Shefer is Lamar Shach, that's Reb Shlomo Kliger, Kotel Lefarish, Haposik in Beparish Yisemar. Ubasish Koyin Kisecha Liznois, the Basish Koyin will start, right, to commit immorality, as Ovio Hi Mechaleles, right, she desecrates her father's covet, Be'esh Tisarif, Chayv Misa. Hine Yesh L'Dagi Dekaloi, what does it mean Kisecha Liznois? She'll begin to be Mizan. What does she begin? She's doing the act. What's Kisechel? The Gemara already asked that question. Come on, ask that question. So what does it mean, Kiseichel? Havalem Rak Ubas Koyin Kitizane. Bachazal Hirgishu Bezeh. For the Dati Shloim Kach. Listen to this, what Shloim Kliger says. Dini Omru Chazal, Keman Karina Hoidne. Today, on what basis do we refer to someone, the Rishi Bat Tzadika? He's a Rosha, the son of a Tzadik. We call him Rosha Ben Rosha. On what basis do we call a Rosha Ben Tzadik Rosha Ben Rosha? So the Gemara brings the Pasuk, the Chsiv Esovio Hi Mechalele. So it rises from Bas Koyin. We just saw the Gemara. The Bas Koyin is Mechalel, her father's covet, because what she did, and it's a reflection on the father. So he says, V'lechoyer Etzrichem Ahodin Kavanosom. We have to understand. What does Chazal mean? Madua la Rosha ben Tzadik, right? Yikra Rosha ben Rosha. How do we understand the basis of that Gemara? Why should it be? He's a Rosha ben Tzadik. Father's a Tzadik. Why do you call him Rosha ben Rosha? The Yashloim Akach. Listen to what Shloim Kliger says. Very interesting thing. He says, the Hinei says, Rishas ho'odom yitochen liyas b'shnei afanim. Hear that? You have two types of Rishoyim. Echot shenoylet kach mi beten liyas Rosha. We have those, like an Esau. Esau was born a Rosha. He was born with all of his negative traits. He was born that way. The Pasuk in Tehillim. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, Zayru Rishoyim Merechem, that the Rosha was already estranged out of the womb as a Rosha. Coming out of the womb, he's called a Rosha already. Born a Rosha. Vasheni, but then there's another type of Rosha. Yuchaliyas be'efshes possible, chenoylad betivaliyas tzadik, faket. He may have been born with all the potential to be a tzadik, but he had a big yetzahara at the same time. To the yetzahara, who nas a Rosha. As Chazal say, al tamin batzmoch jay moishcha, you can be a great tzadik, but to the last day you can fall, you can slip. That's a different type of a Rosha. He wasn't born a Rosha. He turned into a Rosha. He couldn't withstand the challenges, couldn't stand the nisayonis. Vine achilik, go to the top. Vine achilik beneyem, hukach. Gimnoilat Kachlias Rosha, he says, have a bizoyan Lyoviv. Because if a person is born a Rosha, then probably this is a genetic inheritance. If you're born a Rosha, then it is a bizoyan to the father, to be born a Rosha. He says, Shememenu Nika Roya Maisa Oviv, Shizocha, Lahoilit Benoi Baskeze. Dovid HaMelech, by the way, uses very interesting lotion. It's an interesting thing how he touches that posik. Dovid HaMelech says, Hein Be'ovoin Choylalti. Dovid HaMelech says, I was fashioned in sin. Chalalti means right from the beginning of my inception. Ubechet yechemasni imi. My mother conceived me in chet. Haflo vefela. The Melech is indicting himself. No, Al Capone is indicting. I'm not saying we're so, but the Melech is indicting himself. The Melech says it's already from the moment that. So can be high governor in such a case. Noilav memeya oviv liyas Rosha. So Chazal say the Rishia Rishia Batzadika. Why? Kim Shinoil Rosha Mebetem is mashma that there's something in the Teva Ho'av. There's something in the Teva Ho'av that caused it. Al Kenikra Barishia. How do you know, Rabbi Isa? How do you know? Look at a Rosha. How do you know if he was born a Rosha? Right? Or he had potentially to be a tzaddik, but because of the big yesahar that he couldn't withstand in his shyness. Right? The raya, the evidence to know whether he was born that way. He said, you can see it very easily. How? From the Rosh itself. How? Because Chazal says the Shabbos, you know how the Yetzer Hara works? Kachum Noso Shal Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara doesn't start with the biggest Averis. Yetzer Hara starts with the smaller Averis. Once he gets a foot into the door, then now he entices you to even bigger Averis. Now, as he keeps getting you in his, ensnaring you, he goes from Madrega to Madrega. Kachum Noso Shal Yetzer Hara. Hayoi Mamalai say Kach. Every day, right, he goes another step higher. Till ultimately, he doesn't go right away to Avodah Zarah. He goes little by little. So what do you see from that Gemara? The darker shall Yetzirah lahaschil bekalus. Yetzirah works first of all, right, with the easier stuff. V'chol pam, right, and as time goes along, hoylech el hachamuris. From kalos, from the lighter averus, he goes to the chamuris. Ki ef shal Yetzirah loyim el tzadik. Imagine Yetzirah goes to tzadik. Do avodah zarah. Listen to him. He's not going to put such an offer on the table. He starts to be marshal the tzaddik in a smaller aver, and when he's successful, then he tries a bigger aver, and so on and so forth. So he goes by droge. So that's what we see, because the Yetzer Hara will not be successful to go to a tzaddik and be passed a piece of shas aver gedoyle ki pen lo yishmaloi umikra mole who the pasuk says. Look what the pasuk says in Yeshaya. Yeshaya says, "Hoy moishchei ha'avoin, woe to those who pull the aver upon themselves bechavle shov." With cords of falsehood, they pull the avera. And they sin like by pulling the sin like with ropes of a wagon. In other words, you have to begin. It goes this way. You start to pull. As when you start to pull, you go step by step. You start pulling and pulling and pulling. But that's the way the Yetzirah works. It works from the nakal el achomer. However, that's only says b'mi shenoyladi says b'tivoli yisadik. So somebody b'tevez a tzadik, rak mekoich yetzohara maschel arshia, and he does averus because of the yetzohara. So that starts tchila b'kalois, and then it goes to the chamuris, then it goes to the more serious one. Avol says Reb Shlomo Kliger, if he's born b'teva rosha, he can start right away with the chamuris. If a person b'teva is born a rosha, he starts away right away. Then you can right away start with ritzicha, he can start with all the gilarayis away the zurish yichazum. If you're born a rosha, he says. A person who's beteva noil brishes is a maschel taken b'chamuris kim shenoil beteva brishes. Turn this sheet on the side. Almost finished here. Turn it on the side, number 6. That's what the Torah says. It's a very beautiful pshat. Ubas koyin ki seichel is nois. Right away she goes to znos. It didn't go b'hadroge. Ah, that's a simon that this is rishes beteva. This kim tosh shifrim taten. This yarshif midashayim. That's what kiseichel. Ubas koyin kiseichel. She take of his chilo lechet ba'avera. Right? Chamurish is inso. Kim hoisa maschel is ba'avera ketan. If she would have started with a smaller avera, v'achekach biznus, hoyemucha, then be a raya that we should born kshere. It's only afterwards from the smaller averas, right? Achekach chotal yidei pitu ayetzer. It went ba'adrogo. That's if she starts with a smaller avera. So the father therefore but does not carry any guilt. So that's not simply because of pitu hayetzer. That's within the inner nature. Alkin Savir Mechalelis. So if Shlomo Krieger says that Pshat when the Gemara says Rosh Bar Rosh is talking about when you see somebody take of him yad goes to the worst Baveris he's talking about. Similar to the Basish Koyim, that's the Simon as Rosh Bar Rosh he's trying to say because that was Geyarshim. So Kapoim, so you see that Chusovis can go both ways. Geyarshim and Gitazachim. You can also be Yarshim and other things as well. I once said that the truth is when it says that a Rosh Ben Tzadik is called a Rosh Ben Rosh, does not mean Chaz V'Shalom that the father is a Rosh. The father is a tzaddik, but there was a but pshat like this. The father b'teva, you see tzaddikim. Maybe next week it's going to bring him. There are tzaddikim, and this is a very big discussion. You know, even Gabbai Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a very big machloikis between the Sifra Chasidus and Shulev Diskin. There was a big, big controversy regarding Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, was he born b'teva with all the milas of kedusha on the highest level, or Moshe Rabbeinu b'teva had really destructive midos, except he himself, with his own efforts, he transformed himself to be the greatest person. There's a lot to talk about. The point is, Rosh Bar Rosh means to say it's not that the father is now Rosh, he's a tzaddik. But if you have a son of Rosh, it means the father b'teva really was born with riches to get traits, but he turned himself into a tzaddik. But the son,
did not have that koyach. That's Pshat Rosh Bar Rosh. Nish that tzaddik yes Rosh. The son Yarshin with the father's teva was the tata sechozga tata sechat tzaddik, because he, right, in spite of everything, he taker was able to overwork and transform, right, and to overpower the koyaches. But the son Yarshin that from tata. That's the inyan Rosh Bar Rosh. Okay, Rabbi Shem, Yemach Shem.